The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
The complete family album, according to evolutionists, would be, right behind your great-grandfather's picture, an alligator, a walrus, a whale, and then perhaps a bird and maybe an amoeba. Wouldn't that be a great conversation piece to admit who our ancestors really are, according to evolutionists? That's what they are, a whole long line of things, all the way from green scum or brown slime or a kind of a primordial soup of noxious methane and ammonia. How do you show that outside of a gas pump? But you've got all these pictures, and what a conversation piece it would be if you were saying, look, this is my zillionth great-grandfather. You got a picture of a walrus there, and you say, note the dignity. Note the fantastic bristling mustache, and boy, could he ever eat corn on the cob. Or maybe you've got a picture, you say, this is my quadrillionth, billionth great-grandmother, and you got a nursing shark there. And you say, she was a real old lady, one of the old school. A gal who never got out of her depth, really knew how to move around in polite society. Or maybe you'd say, this is the earliest ancestor I've got. Here's a blob, an amoeba, you know. And you say, this guy, he couldn't take a joke. Every time somebody tell him a joke, he'd simply split. I think evolutionary textbooks take up where family albums leave off. Actually, the Bible does, but people don't know that. They don't know they can trace their origins back in the Bible. They don't know the Bible is a book about genealogy for humankind. No, they think because of this subtle teaching that has been foisted upon us somehow from our earliest moments in school, that we are all a result of slime. Now, how does a housewife who is trying to bring up a child in this day and age, remember J. Edgar Hoover said that any child who is taught to obey the laws of God will have little difficulty obeying the laws of man, how does a housewife get around some of these obvious contradictions? It's a kind of an internal and, I would think, a mental and emotional conflict, isn't it, to be brought up one way by sincere, God-fearing parents who took you off to church and to Sunday school, if that's the day of the week they thought they ought to go there on, and they taught you all the memory verses. Maybe you even memorized the Sermon on the Mount. Well, you couldn't have done that. Most people don't. But maybe at least the 23rd Psalm, or God is Love, or Jesus Wept, some of the more difficult verses of the Bible that people memorize. But later on in life, you're trying to teach your own children certain principles of life. But behind, in the back of your mind, is the nagging idea that maybe there isn't really a God up there after all. And is the Bible a collection of fables? Is it merely a collection of stories, kind of like in the category of literature or art? Is it a lot of old sages who were very annoyed with some of the problems of their day and age, the pollution of that time, or the social or moral degradation? That they spoke out with anger, and they pictured God as a wrathful, irate God sitting up in heaven comfortably while shooting his lightning bolt to the suffering humankind here below. What is the Bible after all? I'll tell you what it is. It's your own personal genealogy. You know, the Apostle Paul saw a group of people way back, and these were people upon whom some of the most modern philosophies are based. He was talking to a group of people at Athens over in Greece. And his spirit was stirred in him when he saw the city given entirely over to idolatry. So he was disputing in a synagogue with some Jewish people of that time and in the marketplace. And so certain of these philosophers, they were called Epicureans and Stoics. These were two opposites, some of them who believed in absolute, utter licentiousness, and an opposing school who believed in kind of the type of thing of abstinence and asceticism, self-denial, even to the point of self-flagellation, perhaps. And they said, what will this babbler say? Now, it's the typical attitude of people who have a little bit of education, which can be sometimes a dangerous thing. And another one said, well, he seems to be a setter forth of strange gods because Jesus was being preached and the resurrection of the dead. Now, here are people who are willing by the millions to swallow the idea we came from amoeba. Now, I remind you that evolution demands of you a belief in miracles without a miracle maker. Demands of you a belief in more fantastic miracles than even the Bible does. Evolution says in the beginning was the hydrogen atom, and how that got there we don't know. And the Bible says in the beginning was God, and God made, God created. So he was preaching Jesus and the resurrection. And they took him and brought him to Areopagus, saying, Can we know what this new doctrine is that you're talking about? You're bringing certain strange things to our ears, and we want to know what all this means, because the Athenians and all these people there spent their time, like a lot of scientists do sometimes, in nothing else but to hear or to tell some new thing. You know, they tell us today that a scientist would have to spend about 3 years researching for every one of actual practice just to keep current, and even then he couldn't do it because the avalanche of new material coming out would simply inundate the poor man. And there are more new things coming out today, too rapidly for even a very highly skilled technical person in one of the abstract or technical fields of science to keep up with his own journals in his own field. So Paul stood in the midst of Mars Hill, and he told those men of Athens, he said, "Well, I perceive it in everything, you're just a little bit too superstitious. I passed by, and I beheld your devotions, all the idols to this and that and the other god, the god of wind, rock, hail, fire, and storm." And he said, "I found this inscription, an altar, and it had an inscription on it, 'To the unknown God.'" Now, these fellows were about like a lot of modern Americans and Canadians. They had a just-in-case religion. They weren't going to miss a single bet. Just in case they'd missed anybody up there. Now, they might have had an alligator. They might have had a bird over there. And they might have had one of these beetles in a little tomb the way the ancient pharaohs in Egypt did. You know, they even mummified beetles down there and flies and whatnot and worshipped stuff like that. So these fellows weren't going to miss a single bet. Just in case we've missed anybody, we've got every creature known to man, every power, force, and energy, the sun, moon, and the stars, and all the planets. We worship all of those. But in case we've missed anybody, we better have an altar to the unknown God. Well, Paul said, "Whom therefore you ignorantly worship." How can you worship something in ignorance? Well, Paul said they were doing it, and you begin to wonder about a lot of us today when you take an honest look at some of the superstitions that go along with what a lot of people say is worship. I was even talking about the days of the week being borrowed from ancient paganism. So he said, "God that made the world and all things therein." Did you know that Jesus Christ of Nazareth continually presented God the Father before the people as God the Creator? The Apostle Paul did the same thing. Men of God who gave their lives, as did Paul, based upon what they had seen as eyewitnesses, were not ignorantly worshiping anybody. They were doing it intelligently, and they were doing it as the result of infallible proofs. And so Paul, who later on was killed for his belief, presented to these pagan, superstitious philosophers a God who was the Creator, God who made the world and all things therein. He said, "Seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with men's hands, is not worshipped with men's hands as though he needs anything, seeing that he gives to all life and breath and all things, and is made of one blood all nations of the earth." It's too bad we don't really understand and believe that, isn't it? It's too bad we don't understand that whites and blacks can give each other blood transfusions and no problem whatsoever. We're all of one blood. We cut ourselves, we bleed alike. We perspire alike, we have the same moods and emotions, we have the same gamut of human fears and of hopes and dreams, we have the same emotions that sometimes torment us, play upon us. We're people. We're just folks. The difficulty is what's going on up there. It's in our mind, not in our color, and not in our blood. The Apostle Paul says we're all of one blood. And he has caused them to dwell on the face of the earth and determine the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitations, that they should seek the Lord, if haply they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far from every one of us. And then get this next statement. For in him we live and move and have our being. Now, science tells us that we are made of the very substance of rock, of soil, the minerals of this earth. We, then, are of the ground. That's what the Bible says, too. But science says it all happened fortuitously, by a stroke of luck, a series of fathomless miracles over aeons of mindless time that blind chance with a capital C caused humankind to come into existence. And the Bible says that humankind was reproduced according to a greater kind, that humankind was made in the stamp impress of God kind. And it says that kind reproduces kind today. In him we live and move and have our being. Surely we do, because air, liquid, solid, and gas. And water, all of this around us, matter that occupies space and has shape and has a certain density or has a weight relative to its position with the center of gravity, the heart of the Earth. All of this, that's what we are. We're matter. Now, I've been showing in this series seven proofs that God exists. The first was law requires a lawgiver. The second, life requires a life giver. And the third, there is a creation, and that requires a creator. And the fourth is that kind begets kind, and there isn't any exception to that rule. Well, then I ask this question. How, since we know that is true, the Bible and science agree that kind begets kind, then how did alligators become birds?
Only in the last few decades has man discovered how to take to the air and navigate successfully. Now he flies in all sizes and shapes of aircraft, ranging from homemade hovercraft to supersonic jet fighters and huge airliners. But lonely birds have been flying for thousands of years. The colorful brochure, A Theory for the Birds, takes a fascinating look at the marvels of bird flight and migration, at tiny hummingbirds and huge birds of prey. It explores the unique details of birds from beak to tail feather. In A Theory for the Birds, the woodpecker pokes holes in the theory of evolution. Both you and your children will find it an informative and educational booklet. Request your free copy of A Theory for the Birds. Dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Evolutionists say the closest living relatives to our crocodiles over in the Nile River and in Africa are birds. Now, that's awfully hard for me to believe, and let me tell you one reason why. For example, the reptiles, the giant lizards of the earth, slow, ponderous, heavy, heavy skeletal structures, heavy kind of armor-plated heads and skin with armor plate or like scales, but not really, as we know, a lot of ladies that have alligator or crocodile handbags can tell you that. It's more like a leather armor plating. Now, here are these slimy lizards of the earth, some of which actually exude a kind of a slippery fluid right out of their pores, that have a very vast lifespan, a very, very slow metabolism, who have these heavy skeletal structures, whose digestive systems can break down iron. I mean, they found the remnants of poor people that have been eaten up, and the belt buckles were about half digested. You look at them, then you look at a tiny bird. A bird doesn't sweat. Isn't that beautiful? I'm sure you knew that, but I like to talk about that because birds fly around through the air. They got a very rapid metabolism, the complete opposite of a reptile. They eat about their own weight every day or whatever it is. When people say, oh, she eats just like a bird. Oh, man, then she's got to be really putting it away, maybe 100 pounds a day. It's really a misnomer because birds eat tremendously, prodigiously, because they burn that energy so rapidly. So birds eat almost like no other creatures so far as the weight to size intake ratio is concerned. So here are these little birds with this fantastic rapid metabolism, and they've got porous bones. They've got an intricate little interwoven skeletal system with hollow bones and even a porous cranium with air pockets in it so that they are an aerodynamic, lightweight mechanism. And their skin is built so that they don't sweat. They get rid of whatever, I don't know how they get rid of it, maybe out of their mouth like a dog, you know, the hotter he gets, the more he sticks his tongue out and pants to get rid of it. Some people do that. But anyhow, birds do not sweat. Now, lizards exude slime, some of them, and they have lengthy lifespans. They're very, very big bone. And how did all of this happen? I mean, if you yourself and if I myself ought to have a walrus back of Grandfather's picture in the album there, and that we came from amoeba, how is it that we, with our minds, have such a difficult time in understanding the very process by which we came to be? I don't have all that difficulty in understanding birth. It's a miracle to me. It's a marvel to study into. It's fantastic to think that a little tiny sperm cell and an egg in a few weeks, 8 weeks, can look like a human shape, and a few more weeks, a few more months go by, and here is everything imparted from both the mother and the father. I mean height, shape, weight, texture of skin, color of hair and eyes, perhaps even nature, and perhaps even timbre of voice. That's true of my case and my father. Now, this is a marvel. It's a miracle. It's fantastic. Kind producing kind. It's also very scientific. And it's what the Bible says. God said, let them produce according to their kind, and it was so. And God said it was good. Now, humankind agrees with that today. They say, that is good. But evolution says, no, that's not the way it got started. You know, the story they tell is that one day, back during one of these ancient eras, which they claim to have discovered in fossil life, a reptile began to crawl ashore. Now, they show that there are amphibians, so therefore this is supposed to be a kind of an intermediate species to bridge the gap between purely swimming creatures and those that crawl and can come ashore. There's a fish that actually swims, comes ashore, climbs a tree, you know, over in South Pacific Islands. So this is supposed to be proof that all of this gradually evolved the one thing into another. They tell the story then that one day, while one of these creatures that still had scales was knocking around among the rocks, one of these scales became frayed and was hanging loosely and became kind of frayed and looked feather-like. So then, maybe its progeny had a lot of these loosely hanging scales. Now, you can think a little while. We're getting into science fiction now. See, we're not in real science. We're in science fiction. Then generations of these things finally came along, and they had a kind of a crude first feather. And then one day they began to fly. Now, isn't that marvelous how that could have happened? Do you believe that? A lot of people do. They say that that's easy to believe. That's a lot easier to believe than the fact that God made the world and everything that is in it, and believing in orderly process and in law and the fact that order produces order, not the opposite, and that order tends to degenerate into chaos if it isn't kept orderly. These are the laws that we see, whether it's at a cocktail party or in nature. Things tend to run downhill. They tend to degenerate. They don't do the opposite. Explosions in print shops don't produce encyclopedias. Encyclopedias are produced by work, and by painstaking work at that. Why aren't all Hebrew babies born circumcised? I mean, if knocking around among the rocks can loosely fray a scale, and that can become a feather, why aren't, after centuries, Hebrew babies born circumcised? Do acquired characteristics always get passed on to a child? Or could you adopt a child if you and your wife are university graduates? Could you adopt a child from a fairly primitive race and rear that child to be very much a part of modern-day intelligent society? Well, heredity and environment are very interesting studies, and they're a part of this entire thing, too. But it boils right down to the basic question, did everything as we see it today come into existence over vast periods of time uniformly without any interventions from a powerful, all-wise, divine source? Was life as we see it in the fossil record created? And was much of what we see in the fossil record buried suddenly? Or is the principle of uniformitarianism, of everything happening gradually over endless aeons of time, our guide for the past? Is the present the guide to the past? Or were there fantastic calamities that occurred at some time in the past, and we have evidences of those today?
There's a new Europe coming. From the days when Europe was reduced to rubble at the end of World War II, the plain truth has been predicting its rebirth as a world power. As this European bloc develops independently of the United States and Russia, the plain truth keeps you informed with advance articles. And now, as the European common market emerges economically and politically to shake the world, The Plain Truth brings you the dramatic story behind Europe's return to power. With articles like Cracks in the Atlantic Alliance and Who Speaks for Europe, The Plain Truth helps you keep ahead of events in this fast-moving world at a price we can all afford. It's free. The Plain Truth, after 40 years, still ahead of its time. Dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Let's kind of see if we can recreate the fossil record by a catastrophe of our own here that we're only going to speculate on, and hopefully it'll never really happen. And let's pick Africa, only because there we have a fantastic array of creatures that some people might call primitive, in spite of the fact they're walking around today. And let's say that there is a flash flood and a turgid, roiled avalanche of water comes along, and it is rising very rapidly, and all kinds of life forms, including man, know that this flood is coming because it's raining everywhere. Now, let's say that the catastrophe buries all kinds of creatures. And thousands of years later, the archaeologist Spade is unearthing all of this. Now, here in these streams were freshwater clams. How far did they run from the flood? They didn't go anywhere. They stayed right where they were. Swimming in the river were all kinds of fish. How far did they go? Well, they might have been tossed about here and there a little bit. And as the silts and the clays and the sand in there that was being borne about, the muds by this turgid current, began to gradually solidify as the water went roaring along, a lot of these fish were trapped. And they were simply imprisoned, and they stayed right there in a swimming motion. And then the layers of mud deposited on top gradually began to crush them flat. Now we find these things, crushed flat sharks in swimming motion in the rocks. Fossil record right there. All right, so far so good. What happened to the land creatures? Well, a rhinoceros can go pretty fast for short distances, but not too far, so he ran like mad, and eventually he was overcome. And so did some of the other creatures. The plains game could really run like mad, but a man on a horse, he could go quite a distance, and furthermore, a man's a little more intelligent, so he climbed a tree. And finally, they were all buried. Now, if you were going back with the archaeologist Spade through all of this catastrophe that we hope never occurs, but maybe did at one time in the past, you're digging down through the uppermost strata. What do you find first? You find man. And you find fleet, four-footed quadrupeds. You find elephants. You find warm-bodied, warm-blooded mammals whose bodies were filled with air, who might have bloated and come to the surface and been buried later than some of the cold-blooded animals that might have swum in the rivers or the little mollusks that were buried underneath. What do you find on the bottom? Well, you find algae, if you can find any record of it, and ferns and mosses, and you find clams and mollusks and shrimps and crabs, and above them you find fish and quite a prodigious number of them because they were swimming around in the water. Now, is this some kind of wild, mindless speculation, or is that the way it really would happen if a flash flood came along carrying a tremendous load of silts and buried all these creatures? Are you familiar with some of the processes that affect even our environment around us, such as erosion? That's the way it happens. Water sorts things. It really does. Your own hose in your own garden, your own garage, in watering down the lawn or sweeping off the little bit of concrete will prove that to you. A river does that. I mean, somebody that's panning gold knows that he'd better look for the heavier stuff right down the very bottom of the stream, not way out in the side. That's why people beginning to pan gold get real excited about mica. They see all these little flecks over in the side of the current, you know, on a silt bar somewhere. Well, that's mica. It floats along right on top. Fool's gold, well, iron pyrite is fool's gold, but you're going to find some iron pyrite right at the bottom of the pan. But they know that the heavier rocks are moved by the stronger currents. And you know, the sorting action of water in tidal action in a giant or a vast catastrophe in the past laid down these rocks under our feet just as we see them today. With some few exceptions, there are isoclines, there are geosynclines, there are synclines, there are Horsten, Vessel, and Overthrust faults. There are all types of faulting action in the crust of the earth which can be seen and can be recorded. But when we get to the point that in stratigraphy, they try to tell us in the science of geology that you will find a lower life form deposited on top of a very much higher life form, and that the one stratum is resting conformably on top of another, that it got there by an overthrust fault, then someone is stretching things a little bit. Now let me give you an example of this. It's a theological argument. Many people claim that the flood of Noah was not true. Other people are willing to say, well, maybe it happened, but it was a local flood. It just happened right there. So Noah had to build an ark, did he? So people have said, well, men didn't have sense enough to migrate out of there. They only had 120 years. They couldn't have gone very far. So everybody but Noah, who built the ship, was exterminated, and the flood only covered the area of present-day Palestine or maybe the Tigris and Euphrates Valley. Some of them are kind of confused on that. Man, they say, couldn't have moved another country away or over a mountain range somewhere to the top of a mountain on foot in 120 years. But now what about the Swiss Alps? Well, in the Swiss Alps, there are many problems for geologists and evolutionists. Because in the Swiss Alps are found some non-conformable, that's a word they use that I'll explain a little bit later, which you can have in some of the literature we will send to you, are some non-conformable strata. They don't belong there. Now, they really do. Don't let me confuse you. They belong right where they're found. They're probably laid down right in that order. But the fossils that are found in them don't fit the theory of evolution. So evolutionists have got to explain that those fossils and those giant Swiss Alps, and there's a lot of folding evident in the Swiss Alps, got there from someplace else. Well, do you know that it's current geology that many of the mountains in the Swiss Alps were moved up there from the Atlas Range in northern Africa? How about that? Geology says the Swiss Alps can be moved from North Africa to the heart of Europe, but Noah couldn't walk away from a flood in 120 years. Seems to me the reasoning is false there somewhere. Now, to describe the way science is supposed to work, you propose or you postulate a certain theory, and then you go look for data. That's a new word for fact. People aren't quite sure what is a fact anymore, because people have lost sight of what is right and what is wrong anymore. They don't like to say this is a fact. They're afraid they'll get caught and have to admit that it's always a fact. If it's once a fact, it's always a fact. So they say, well, maybe. So the idea is that you gather data. And if that data fits that philosophy, that theory, or that postulate, then it becomes a part of it. But if it doesn't, then you're supposed, according to the methods of science, to change that postulate or that theory to admit the new evidence in the form of data or a fact. However, in the story of evolutionary geology, whole massive areas for hundreds of miles of this Earth's crust that are supposed to be non-conformable, that is, they don't fit the idea of uniformitarianism, have been moved hundreds of miles. Overthrust faults have been said to exist where there is no evidence they exist. For the rocks that would be created by the grinding action of one giant movement of land surface over another are simply not there. When one stratum rests conformably, that is, that you can see it. You can go to the Grand Canyon and look. Do you see between one of those obviously different color strata and another one, or stratum, that there is a lot of grinding, that there are metamorphosed rocks? No, just one beautiful sedimentary blanket laid on top of another one, sometimes 10 to 15 feet thick, and mixed just about as well as you could do with a blender in your home. But they say, no, the one got on top of the other one somehow to explain away the fact that they think they found fossils in the wrong order. That's quite a story all by itself. The Bible says kind after kind, and that's the fourth major proof there is a God, and we know that law operates right now today. Evolutionary science says no, there is no God. In the beginning was the hydrogen atom. Which one are you willing to believe? I'm willing to believe the proof. You ought to write for this brochure a theory for the birds. And the reason that has a facetious title is exactly because we intended it to. The theory of evolution is not proved, and it cannot be proved. This brochure, A Theory for the Birds, remember, is without cost. It's free of charge. You're not going to be asked to join anything. It's a free educational service in the public interest. You'll enjoy reading it. All you need to do is read it and then put it down. It'll take you maybe 30, 40 minutes or a little longer to read the whole thing. All you need to do to receive this brochure is to give us the call letters of your station. We'd like that. If you would, please, the call letters of your radio station. While you're at it, why don't you request the current number of the Plain Truth and find that there is a solution beyond human understanding. And that's what you will read in the Plain Truth. It is Plain Truth, straight from the shoulder, plain talk. I hope you'll write for it. We'll send it to you by return mail as soon as you dial that toll-free number, 800-423-4444. Or you can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.